Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen. We're here to pump up your parenting skills, pump up your knowledge, pump up your energy. Welcome to Parent Pump Radio. Our show is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as syndicated on missionsradio.org and liveleadplay.com. Go to parentpumpradio.com to leave your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows, and be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed. My Amazon number one best-selling book called The Amazing Itty Bitty Book on Family Leadership, 15 Simple Tips Successful Companies Use That Families Can Implement at Home, would be a great small gift to somebody that you know this Christmas if you can't think of something. It's just $6.99 on paperback on Amazon. The link is in the show notes to purchase the book. And as always, I have my 3-month Harmonious Family Blueprint program for this coming year. It would be a great New Year's resolution to get your family structure and foundation back on track. Contact us to get more information. You can email us at info@integrativeminds.com, and that email address is also in the show notes. Today's episode is about daycare and how you're making decisions on the daycare. Most of the U.S. families here, all the adults work, and fewer than 1 in 3 children today have full-time stay-at-home parents. In 1975, only a generation ago, more than half of all children had a stay-at-home parent. And because most parents work outside the home, most children under 5 years old receive childcare from someone other than their parent. In fact, almost 1/4 of children under the age of 5 are in some form of organized childcare arrangement, which includes daycare centers, nurseries, preschools. And what research tells us that if you find a quality childcare for the first 5 years of a child's development, it actually provides a solid foundation for future success, has long-term academic and social benefits for the child's and society. And the evidence is very clear. Children who do participate in high quality program during their early year demonstrate lasting effects on IQ, boost academic and economic achievement, and there's lower incidence of childcare obesity and chronic illness. Now, it's great if your child is enrolled in a quality childcare, but what happens if they aren't? Our guest today is going to share with you what happened to her and how she became a huge advocate to raise awareness on childcare and what happens when you don't have that quality childcare. She was born and raised in Torrance with over 100 years family history in this community. She's a single mom to one son. She has had a lifelong history of community services and volunteer as a leader, and some of her awards have been as a Caregiver of the Year for the California Brain Injury Association, Woman of Distinction at El Camino College, Memorial Award for Dedication to Children, and the list goes on. I mean, she gave me so much, I probably would spend the next 30 minutes reading all the awards and accolades she's received, but I think that you should hear from her. So ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Catherine Power. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me. I'm blessed to be a mother and honored to be a guest parent on your show.
I think sometimes as parents, we forget that there are different kinds of daycare systems out there, and some are great. And then there's going to be some that are not great. And we have parents who have children in all of these levels. And I know you've had your experience the other way. And I can't wait to hear you share your story mm-hmm. and give us some things that we should look out for. So how old was your son when he started daycare?
I returned to work after my typical 6 weeks. And so he started at the age of like 3 months. When we first started going to daycare. And we chose a home licensed daycare as opposed to a organization or institution.
I know for me, when I put my kids in daycare, I wanted to choose a home because I just felt like I wanted a home atmosphere.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That was the same thing for us.
And 3 months is probably an average age for most parents to put their children?
Well, you know, with the FMLA Act back in 1999, when my story occurred, that wasn't in place where you could take off 12 weeks to bond with your baby. So we were returning to work at about 6 weeks, which is way, way, way too early to leave your baby with somebody that you're going to try to trust them with.
Tell us what happened. When I know as a mom, I'm sure you did all the research that you possibly could, and you probably interviewed and asked all the questions.
Well, first of all, I think you wanted me to share with your listeners what is shaken baby syndrome.
Right.
Shaken baby syndrome is also known as abusive head trauma. And it's the term that's used to describe the constellation of signs and symptoms resulting from violently shaking of an infant or a small child. The number one reason that babies get shaken is that the caregiver is highly frustrated with a crying baby. And when they shake the baby, because of the, you know, their brains are so fragile and their necks are so weak, it causes the brain to hemorrhage. And the telltale sign to distinguish this from any other form of injury or abuse is it causes retinal hemorrhaging. Oh. Which oftentimes leads to blindness. And the results for babies that are shaken have the potential to result in death or permanent neurological disabilities. And you can find a lot of information about shaken baby syndrome on don'tshake.org.
And we have that in the show notes.
Yes.
I want to get back to your story too. It's important.
Sure. Let's back up and I'll just tell you, you know, the story as I recall it from 18 years ago. I picked my four-month-old son up from a California licensed daycare provider at the end of the day. And I should add that the reason I chose this daycare provider, I interviewed 19 daycare providers. I know that sounds extreme, but I really did diligent work in finding the right place. And a couple of the reasons that I chose this family daycare was they were number one in my neighborhood. Number two, she was a former preschool teacher. Her husband was an EMT. She had children of her own. She was younger than me, which I appreciated because a lot of the women were much older. Her home was very conducive. The layout was very conducive to childcare. She provided meals. And so every time I'd walk in her house in the morning, she was making breakfast for the older children. It really was a great fit. And so I was really excited to find such a great daycare at an affordable cost. So what happened was I stopped at the house after work one day to pick my four-month-old son up from her home at the end of the day. And a rescue squad was at the house and treating my baby. And I didn't get too shocked at initially because I knew that her husband was an EMT and an ambulance driver. And so I thought that maybe he was just stopping home for dinner or something. But as I arrived at the home, the daycare provider said, "Here she comes now." And then, you know, my heart suddenly dropped that meant that they were tending to my baby. Well, we rushed off in an ambulance to the hospital, and I happened to work at the hospital at the time. So I had just left there. And it was a Thursday afternoon, and I had to sign a release that my baby may die in transit. Now, the reason for that is they wanted to rush us to a county hospital. And I was like, no way. We're going to the local medical center where I work. I just didn't want to go to county hospital where they have gunshot trauma and all of that. I had no idea what had happened to my baby. But as we went to the hospital, he was in and out of consciousness. He was on oxygen and he was experiencing seizures. And he was laying on my belly while he was going through all of this. Yeah. So when we arrived at the hospital, they did a CT scan of the brain and they found massive brain hemorrhaging and determined that he needed to be expedited to a children's trauma center. While the whole medical team took off, I returned to the daycare provider's house to ask questions about what had happened. I was sitting on the couch with her and her husband, and she told me that my baby, who was only 4 months old, was in a swing, and that another child, who I believe was under 1 year of age, so I'm saying that she probably didn't walk yet, she told us that this other child bent down to pick up a toy under the swing and bumped the swing, and my baby started crying. But the daycare provider said that she had two hurt, you know, children, one that was crying because she bumped her head and mine who was crying because he got bumped in the swing, but he didn't fall out. So she said, then my baby's eyes rolled back in his head and he went unconscious. Now, keep in mind that she never called me during any of this. I was unaware of any of this going on. I just happened to show up at the house. So at that time, I just thought my child was sick. I didn't know that there was an injury. I had no clue. So I grabbed his car seat from her house and I drove to the trauma center. And at midnight that evening, Department of Children's Services sent an investigator to interview me. And again, I had no clue. I thought my baby was sick. I had no clue that he was injured because there was no outside evidence. There's no, you know, there's no broken bones. There's no blood. There's no evidence of outer injury. I later learned about his diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. And in fact, also found out that there was evidence of two prior bleeds, which meant that he was probably shaken on two earlier occasions that dated 3 and 5 weeks prior, and also told that he may not make it through the night. Those prior bleeds coincide with incidents that happened at the daycare provider's home. And an example of something that I want your listeners to be aware of is when you have these young infants that are on formula, sometimes they don't tolerate it well. So they do a lot of throwing up their formula or not handling it well. And I rushed my baby to the doctor 3 or 5 weeks earlier. And we just kept doing formula changes. And the doctor just chalked it up to GERD, which is, a lot of us adults know what GERD is. It's right. The acid reflux. You know, I took my baby to the doctor and we did formula changes and he kept throwing up his formula. And anyway, child services spent 3 hours talking to me, and then they called my then husband on the phone and spoke to him in the middle of the night. He got to go home and I stayed there with the baby. And then 3 days later, a social worker came to the hospital, pulled me and my then husband into a room and told us that my baby was being detained and that we could no longer see him.
Wow. Just like that.
Yeah, just like that.
It must have cost you a lot to defend yourself, I'm sure financially, but what kind of toll it must have taken on you?
It was all very quick. I mean, when things like this happen, you don't have a lot of time to think about things. We actually retained two attorneys rather quickly and found out that both me and my husband, we both needed an attorney because we were both considered suspects at this time. And we were charged with 5 counts of child abuse and 2 petitions to permanently remove our parental rights. Having never been in this world of DCSF and child abuse, what do charges look like? Well, I'll just let you know what they were. Causing serious physical harm, failure to protect, serious emotional damage, severe physical abuse, and cruelty. So those were the things that we were charged with. And wow. Keep in mind that even though we were taken from the daycare provider's home, she was not a suspect in this case. It was just unbelievably shocking.
Right. That doesn't even make sense to me, since she probably saw your son more in his waking hours than you did.
Exactly. Made no sense whatsoever.
And I think that's ridiculous how quickly they just, I mean, they interview you overnight and the next day your child's in a foster care system.
Exactly. Exactly. So my parents were in Hawaii when this occurred. I had to call my mom in Hawaii. And of course, she was all excited to hear from me. But I was crying so hard on the other end, but I got them to come home. And my mom kept saying, oh, honey, you know, they're not going to take your baby away. Well, they did. I'm going to share with your listeners how quickly they throw children into the foster care system.
Yes, please.
Yeah, but we did get my parents approved to be the baby's guardian rather than going into a foster family. So anyway, we were on trial for 4 months. And we were slammed with one thing after the next, including my precious baby having to have brain surgery. And we couldn't even be present at the hospital for him to go through brain surgery. It was gut-wrenching what they put me through. And the baby was in such a fragile state. And at some point in the trial, we were presented with a 12-page document where the state recommended that it was in my baby's best interest to have no reunification with us. And they conducted an adoption assessment on him. So they were working really fast, putting my baby up for adoption when the trial wasn't even over yet.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had also learned from our attorneys that they had, Clinton, who was president at that time, had just signed a bill to expedite adoption. So it's just absolutely crazy what they put us through.
Wow. Okay. So what was revealed during the trial?
Well, this was the interesting part. The social workers revealed that the daycare provider had shared up to 5 different versions of that alleged swing incident that day. If you remember the swings from about 20 years ago. So the judge just, and my attorneys were just slamming these social workers, five different versions. And the agency that does the licensing of the daycare providers, they just did a very cursory investigation. And things like were revealed that they didn't examine the other child who allegedly was hurt. Mm-hmm. And how could she bend over when she doesn't even walk yet? And they didn't ask to see the swing, which would have been a huge piece of evidence. And we later learned that it was removed from the premises.
Wow, that's evidence there.
Absolutely. Another investigator presented a journal from the daycare provider, and it revealed all kinds of narrative about her frustration with my son, how he cried all the time, and she had intentions to, quote unquote, get rid of him once she finds a replacement. Now, this was all news to me that she was having such a hard time with my baby crying, because when we were at home, he's your sweet little angel. I mean, we just didn't experience that. So we don't know what was going on there. And then at one point during the trial, we were given an offer. We admit guilt and we get our baby back, which I just consider blackmail. But if we did that, DCSF would have jurisdiction over him till he was age 18. Well, we were fighting, you know, get your baby back or not. And so we opted to not get our baby back. I mean, there's no way on God's green earth that I was going to admit to harming my baby. I just wasn't going to do it.
Wow. So then what happened?
Well, the outrageous investigations and actions and the lack of knowledge about what our social workers were investigating and the lack of communication between all these agencies. And oh, I should also add that my attorneys called the daycare provider to the witness stand, and she took the Fifth Amendment. So she was never questioned. My attorney said they could have just slammed her if they got her on the stand.
Okay.
But we were constantly reminded that my husband and I, we were the ones being charged, not her. So we had to put every breath and every dollar we made into getting our baby back and not worry about why nothing happened to her. So, you know, it was a good $100,000 for our attorneys.
Wow.
And that was 20 years
ago.
Wow.
So I know you got your son back. So how did that come about?
We did. So after 4 months on trial and spending hours on the witness stand, I mean, they grilled me to death, but I was like my attorney actually said I should receive an Academy Award. I was so good on the stand. And, you know, I kind of chuckled at that. But anyway, the state rested their case and the presiding judge just threw the whole thing out. We never even presented our side. The way that it was solved is that the treating neurologist, the person who, you know, was treating my baby for the brain injury, testified that the injury had to have occurred within 2 hours of the onset of the symptoms. So I dropped him off at 7:30 in the morning. So there's no way that I could have shaken him that morning and dropped him off at daycare.
Okay. So what happened to the daycare provider? Did they get shut down and charged then?
Well, the state objected to the judge and threw it all out. And so they returned the baby to us. I broke down crying so hard they needed to take a recess to finish the proceedings. But I returned to court and the judge said, you know, you can consume yourself with this the rest of your lives or you can move on. So we rushed home to get our baby and I had so much rebonding to do. But the truth of the matter is I was really scared to bring my baby home. Mm-hmm. I was unsure of what I'd be faced with, having a brain injury and all. And, you know, my depression was very painful to deal with. And I was so happy, but the ache and pain of this being brushed under the carpet in terms of the daycare provider, you know, I just felt that I had a moral obligation to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else in her care. But you know what, Jacqueline? Nothing was on her record. There was nothing we could do.
Wow.
I mean, it was absurd. It reminded me kind of like O.J. Simpson, like getting off and then just like, well, if he didn't do it, who did?
Yeah.
You know, we all know how that goes. So 2 years later, worked with state legislators and we authored Senate Bill 819 in 2001 that will change the way these cases are investigated when all evidence against the parents are dropped and all the evidence points to being in the care of the daycare provider, that they reopen an investigation. And that would have been all we wanted at that point. I hope that this law is going to be helpful for someone else who experiences such pain.
Now, this law has been passed already?
Yes, this was actually in 2001. So it went through the whole Senate and Assembly and it's an authored law signed by Governor Gray Davis back then. And it's actually written into the Community Care Licensing Daycare Manual.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your hard work and your effort in helping future parents who may be going through this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Let's talk about daycare, because you learned a lot, and I would love for you to share some of your knowledge about, you know, how to choose daycare, what you'll be looking for, what you'll be asking for.
Well, that's a really good question. And you got to remember that this was 18 years ago, and we didn't even have the internet back then.
Yeah, that's so true. That's
or
true.
We kind of barely did anyway. So
yeah,
I was looking up daycare providers in a newspaper and actually making appointments and knocking on their door. But today, there are so many ways that you can check references on daycare providers. Many of them have websites. You can get a lot of information by just going to State of California website on selecting a daycare provider. We also have a feature called Trustline, where you can look up a daycare provider's credentials. But my main thing that I want to leave with your listeners is, for me, I really wanted my baby in a home daycare, but if I were to do this all over again, I would definitely put my baby in an organization, and I would make sure that they have more than one adult present at all times. The main point about what happened with my daycare in my case is that while in my heart and while all the evidence pointed to it being, you know, happening at the daycare provider's home, there's absolutely no way of proving that she did it. So people are like, well, aren't you like really, like, don't you want to just go, you know, kill that daycare provider? And it's like, you know what? In my heart of hearts, who knows that she even did it? It could have been her husband. It could have been her then 9-year-old child. It could have been the mailman. I mean, even still today, I don't know that she did it. And so I kind of hesitate, because maybe she really didn't do it. Maybe it was somebody else that she left my son in their care. I don't know. I mean, who knows if, you know, she had her husband come home and she ran to the grocery store. I don't know.
Yeah.
All we know that it totally happened while at her home.
Okay. There are some really good home daycare. I mean, I know my kids grew up in home daycare and they were amazing, but I did do my research. You know, I called the department that hands out these childcare licenses, mm-hmm. and ask them who would they choose. And they said, hey, if you get into this place, you're golden. They're amazing. So like mm-hmm. you said, I think it's just a lot of research too, but you also interviewed 18 daycare.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember this licensed daycare provider, she came with great references.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing wrong with her. And even still today, in fact, I would share that I was working with Dr. Phil Producers, because I, more than anything, what I would like to not take to my grave is the unknown about what happened to my baby that day.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to sit with her mother to mother and see if we could talk about what happened that day and grant her immunity and just really sit down and, you know, I want to know. But she was very rude and just shut down the Dr. Phil show in a heartbeat. So
okay, yeah.
I was kind of bummed. And the other thing that needs to change is pediatricians. I mean, I took my baby to the doctor 4 times since I started daycare and the date of this injury. And she missed it. I mean, if my baby had 2 prior bleeds in his brain, maybe they need to think outside the box too, and not just think that it's acid reflux. I mean, we all know that when you have a brain injury, you don't let somebody fall asleep and they're going to be throwing up. So lots to learn here.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things is kind of not always just chalking
Absolutely.
It up to just, oh, he's just crying and it may be GERD. Yeah. So are there clues that you need to listen to, clues that might be bigger that the daycare provider is not telling you?
Well, it, you know, things happen. Like one day she called me at work and said, my baby was crying so hard he stopped breathing and was turning blue. Well, I rushed home from work, picked him up, and took him to the doctor. Of course, he was fine by then.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor says, well, you know, when babies cry really hard, sometimes that happens. Well, okay. And then another time was I showed up at the house unannounced because she had shared with me that he was crying and turning blue. So I showed up at the house unannounced, and they were in the backyard and she was holding my baby, but my baby couldn't handle the sun. He was like blinking and trying to turn away from the sun. And she called him, you know, oh, he's just a little Dracula. Well, what happened was he had retinal hemorrhaging and he couldn't tolerate light.
Right.
Yeah. So not that anybody would pick up on those things, but I think that this being my first baby and only baby, by the way, you learn from other parents and you learn from your daycare provider. I was very open to her advice and her, you know, her knowledge of dealing with children and babies. So I didn't know. I just thought he couldn't see in the sun. I didn't know that he had retinal hemorrhaging.
Right.
So there may have been some things there that both me and the pediatrician, you know, if we knew better, we would have known. Yeah.
Right. We have a few minutes left.
Okay.
And I want you to tell us how things are going with your son now, because you mentioned that was 18 years ago. So he's 18. And I want to know a little about how you're doing.
Well, my son is doing fine. He just graduated from high school and he's actually working to become an EMT. So I think it's kind of his way of giving back. And I'm very excited about that. He is partially blind in his right eye, but he hopes to someday join the Navy and serve as a medic. We went through a lot of obstacles, but everything we pretty much overcame and we're in a great place now. But what started it for me was 2 years ago, starting to put myself first. And that started with getting a life coach to discover what have I been dying to do over these last 18 years that I haven't allowed myself the opportunity to experience.
And how has that changed your life?
Great. I can say that I got a life coach and the main thing that came up is what causes me to not be able to do these things that I dream about and pray about. And it basically was just the exhaustion. I come home from work and I'm exhausted and short of breath and everything. And it turns out that after 30 years with the cardiologist, I went to a new cardiologist to help me with my shortness of breath and everything. And they discovered that I had a hole in my heart. So I went into open heart surgery. And now here I am a year later after getting the hole in my heart repaired and my son's doing great. Now that I have time to spend at home, it gives me an opportunity to continue sharing my story and raising awareness about the gross injustice that takes place in a lot of these cases around the world. I'd like to look into further volunteering for children who've been abused and going through the foster care system. I hope to spend time to dedicate to volunteering from home and seek out more opportunities for speaking and finish my book that I started in 2009. Finally have time.
Yes, Catherine. I'm going to have to kick your butt on that book.
Yep.
You keep talking about that.
Absolutely.
You gave me a link to a Channel 5 news coverage that I want to put in the show notes. Can you tell us what that Channel 5 news coverage is about?
Sure. Well, my son was shaken on December 2nd of 1999. And on that date, about 3-4 years ago, they did a proclamation for my son called Never Shake a Baby Day in the city of Torrance. And so we were honored by the city council and Channel 5 news came out and covered the story. And the reporter, Brandy Hitt, she did just such a great job of covering, interviewing us and doing a little bit of education about what shaken baby syndrome is. And I should add, if you go to that link and you see it and you see my son, he looks nothing like that now. I mean, he's all grown up now and he actually, as an 18-year-old, he kind of wants nothing to do with this because now it's just embarrassing. And I think that's just his stage of life. But he was a national spokesperson for many years and we did a lot of community outreach for this cause. But you know, teenagers, you know how they can be.
Yeah. Hey, everybody go through a stage in their life.
Exactly.
So if you want to reach out to Catherine for anything, her email address is cpaour@yahoo.com. Now, all these information is in the show notes. Her phone number, they have a Facebook page. The link to the Brain Injury Association of America is there. And if you want to know more about the California Senate bill that she talked about, it's also there.
Yes.
So thank you, Catherine, so much for all of what you've done, not just for yourself, but for the world, really, because you've brought so much awareness. And I'm so glad that you got your life coach and you're taking care of yourself. It's time.
Absolutely. And Jacqueline, I have to add that you are one of my life coaches too. So don't you forget that.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Okay. And listeners, thank you for listening. Until next time, always be learning, always be growing.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured. And after listening to the show,
go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.